Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:34 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is April 7th. I thought we'd kick off with the KBW NASDAQ Global Bank Index. So it's been ranging for a long time, and in fact, it's basically been in this exceptionally lengthy and volatile base formation since 2009. So we're looking at 12 years of ranging, and it was looking rather optimistic at the end of last year that it might, in fact, be able to hold the move above 1,000. But that hasn't been the case. I think the rising inflation and certainly the uncertainty unleashed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine has pretty much put the kibosh on any potential for it to break out in the near term. So, what have we got here? We've got this volatile range. Every time it's got up to 1,000, it's failed and done so in a dynamic manner. And after each one of those failures, it has eventually gone right back down to the lower side of the range, which is somewhere between 500 and 600. And we had another failed upside break above 1,000. We had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It's encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's down in a dynamic manner again this week. This is bearish in terms of the price action. And we give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, which is on the downside. So it's looking increasingly likely that we're going to see lower to lateral ranging and potentially even a retest of the lows. Now let's bear in mind that this is a global index. So it's not just banks in Europe or in the USA. It's basically everywhere. And there are a good number of Chinese banks in there as well. So we have JP Morgan, but we've also got Banco Santander, Mitsubishi UFJ, and China Construction Bank, Bank of China, UniCredito, and Toronto Dominion. So it's very representative of the big banks that are out there in the world, and there are only about 30 constituents. So it's a also representative of the big banks around the world. And banks are lead indicators because they're liquidity providers. And banks thrive when there's lots of money about. They thrive when there's demand for credit. And when they do not thrive, well, it tells us that financial conditions are tightening, that risk aversion is rising. And if banks aren't lending, well, then it reduces liquidity in the global markets. And bull markets thrive on liquidity. So if banks aren't doing well, it suggests that stock markets are not going to thrive. So this is an important signal. And the worse banks do, then the bigger the weighting that it should play in negativity towards the outlook for stock markets. So we're seeing an increasing number of warning signals for future trouble. Now, when we think about the yield curve spread, well, it has pushed back up into positive territory, and we're up to nearly 20 basis points. So this has been quite a rebound. And we're starting to see the short end of the curve beginning to move higher, but it's doing so in a very modest fashion. The 3-month yield is currently at 67 basis points. So it has jumped higher over the last 3 or 4 days. But the consensus right now is that within 6 weeks, interest rates are going to jump by 50 basis points. So what we would have to then anticipate is that within the next 6 weeks, this rate is going to be at least 1%, and potentially more than that. Now, when we think about the spread between the 10-year and the 3-month, well, that means then that the 10-year yield would have to rebound even faster if this continued move in the spread is going to be or is going to start to contract, or excuse me, is if this spread is going to persist on the way up, then it's likely that the 10-year yield will rise even faster than the 3-month. And this is still an uptrend overall. So As we think about where liquidity is, it would be very easy to just look at this and think, well, that this is suggestive that liquidity conditions are still easing, but that's not at all the case. The reality is that because 10-year yields and yields at the long end of the curve, just about everywhere, are ramping higher, then it's forcing investors to go into exceptionally short-dated bonds. It's the only way that bond portfolios can insulate themselves from the downward trend that we're seeing right now. So when we look at ETFs for bond prices, the TLT is accelerating lower. Now, it accelerated higher in 2019 and 2020, and since then it has been giving it up. So we're now back to the level that we were at in the middle of 2019, but we're back well inside the range that preceded before the pandemic. And we've got a very short-term oversold condition. Now, when we look at what happens in terms of demand for bonds, it's simple enough. The Federal Reserve isn't going to be buying bonds anymore. And then they're also going to be reducing the number of bonds sitting on their balance sheet. So they're going to start unwinding the balance sheet by rolling off coupons, and then they'll have to start outright selling mortgage bonds as well, because there's just no refinancing happening when yields are this high. So then, if there isn't a clear bid coming through from the central bank, well, it's natural that prices would fall because there aren't as many people buying. And you also have people that are worried about inflation selling at the long end of the curve. But then the higher yields go, the more attractive they become, and you start getting the value proposition emerging. And that's going to be very much tied to what perceptions of future inflation are going to be like. So oil prices are closing out the day close to $100. And the backwardation between the first and the second month contracts has contracted to about 58 cents. So this has been a very swift contraction from an extraordinarily wide level. And we're back now inside the longer term range. And it also suggests that there's less urgency. The release of supply from strategic reserves, not just in the USA, but in a number of other countries, is helping to ameliorate the very severe low inventory environment that has persisted for the last while. So this is obviously a challenge here, that there's a lot of inflation. There's people are very worried about inflation. Bond yields are surging higher, but oil prices are starting to come back down. That should help to mitigate some of those inflationary pressures. Now, the problem, of course, is that there are shortages. I'm having work done in my house right now. I was chatting to one of the contractors yesterday, and they're talking about having great difficulty sourcing materials, and most particularly paint. So lumber prices are definitely coming back down. That hasn't yet shown up in material costs at places like Home Depot or Lowe's, but they are starting to come back down. There is an acute shortage of paint right now because a lot of it is latex based, and that's very much tied to rubber, but also to the plastics and chemicals business, which has been impacted by higher prices for oil, and then refineries just having to retool to cater to an evolving demand scenario. So we're still going to have these shortages, and the only way to tackle that when it's impossible to create a supply response is to create a demand response. So even though inflationary pressures appear to be starting to peak, central banks are going to persist. They're looking at inflation as a systemic problem where you have full employment and a mountain of debt and the potential for social unrest. And This is going to be particularly worrisome for countries with floating rate mortgages, and the UK is certainly one of those. So, bond yields in the UK are now up to 1.73%. It's the highest level since at least 2016. It's a reasonably consistent trend overall. The shadow banking rate for the UK has increased by 1,000 basis points in the space of about 6 months. It came from negative 8%, more than negative 8%, to positive territory. So there's already been a lot of tightening. There's this temptation to think that there's 200 billion of excess savings. But how much of that excess savings has been the inflation in housing prices? How much of it has been because people haven't been simply spending less? And then, of course, there are the people who don't own homes. There are the half of the population who aren't really experiencing any kind of wage gain or wealth gain during the pandemic. And those people are going to have to make some very difficult decisions about consumption. So it's quite likely that UK banks aren't going to be any different from what we've seen internationally. So the FTSE 350 is beginning to roll over. Now it's been led lower by Barclays. So that's for some individual circumstances, but it is now at a new low. HSBC has been much steadier, but it is now also beginning to weaken. And that's probably one of the stronger banks around. The S&P 500 banks are clearly breaking downwards, and the outlook for JP Morgan, which we have to pay attention to because it led on the way up off the lows in 2008. We can see here that JP Morgan was breaking out to new all-time highs in 2014 and 15. So it's now right in the region of that 1,000-day moving average, which is the big trend mean for secular trends. So it would be highly desirable that it can continue to find support in this area. Now, as we look around global markets, well, Europe is talking about raising rates, and it's the region where the difficulties with sourcing materials as a result of the war in Ukraine is going to fall most heavily. So the Euro Stoxx 50 was down in a reasonably dynamic manner and extending the decline for the week. So this is resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it's a type 2 top formation. So we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And when we think about the FTSE 250, well, it also pulled back violently and is now encountering resistance as well below the 200-day moving average. So the best that we can hope for is some prolonged ranging. And I guess we're unlikely to have a clear break higher until central banks relent and stop talking about raising rates. But the challenge, of course, is that when we think about something like the S&P 500, well, it's still really close to that all-time peak, and we're still miles away from the 1,000-day moving average. So it was in positive territory in here today, and this was a reasonably impressive rebound. So we're even now starting to still see evidence of dip buying and enthusiasm about the potential that inflation might in fact peak. So maybe they won't raise interest rates as much. But as long as bond yields are rising, we're still in a risky environment overall. And the most interest rate sensitive portion of the market remains weak. Now, if we see a higher reaction low and we start to see upside follow through and a higher high, well, then we'll have confirmation of a medium term low. And a lot of bad news has already been priced into these speculative portions of the market. But we would definitely now need to start to see yields coming back down. But if inflation is peaking, then bonds will be a buy. And that will also represent a catalyst for interest to flow back into the more speculative arm of the market. I do not anticipate that following this kind of decline, we're going to see the peaks revisited anytime soon. It's much more likely that we move into a volatile ranging phase, but it's also likely at the beginning of that ranging phase we get a counter trend rally to snuff out the short trades and to move into more of a base formation overall. When we then think about the dollar, well, if they're going to remove supply, then that's beneficial for the dollar to continue to rally. And it was in additional positive territory in here today. Now, if and we're in an odd situation where the dollar continues to rally and gold remains really quite steady. It was up $5 in here today. It was up 10 at one point today, but wasn't quite able to hold all of the move. As soon as yields do in fact peak, then that's likely to be the starting gun for the next big move higher in gold. If inflationary pressures are moderated by tighter financial conditions, then central banks are less likely to raise rates. Then the competition that gold has from rising treasuries is going to be less severe. So then we move back into a less interest rate positive type of environment. There's also a lot of interest in the let me see if I can find the 5 year. This is the TIPS yield, and it's been ramping higher, but still at negative 64 basis points. So what investors are pricing in here is that yields need to rise, and they need to rise faster because investors aren't being compensated by the move up in CPI. So the TIPS premium or the TIPS maturity is going to be very much influenced by what the inflation measure is. And if yields are falling like are rising like this, it suggests that investors aren't going to be compensated to nearly enough to just protect them from inflationary pressures. And break-even rates are also at really quite high levels. And the way a break-even rate is calculated is how much you would be you need in order to compensate you for the loss in purchasing power of inflation, and it's up to about 2.4% at present, or 8.4% at present, I should say. So we've also seen a meaningful move higher here, and it doesn't really look like it's over. This looks like a consolidation overall. I do, however, think that we're going to get to a point where inflationary pressures will moderate because growth is going to pull back. And we're definitely seeing that in terms of financial conditions overall. And of course, then we continue to see that there's a downward pressure coming to bear in China. They're really struggling to get a handle on the coronavirus. So the CSI 300 reopened after its after the tomb sweeping holiday and is now starting to pull back once more. And some of the larger technology companies from China listed in the Nasdaq were among the leading decliners today. What's I think also rather interesting right now is that some of the largest companies on Wall Street are still quite steady. So Google was off its lows in here today and still holding the region of the 200-day moving average. And Microsoft is also continuing to hold here, and Apple has also been quite steady. And these companies are favored because of the strength of their balance sheets and their ability to raise prices and their large cash piles. So they offer some of the insulation that investors want from inflationary pressures. So this As long as these shares don't break downwards, that's going to act as a support for the wider market. But in order to really confirm that the medium-term correction is over, then we will need to see the advanced decline line, in fact, break back above the 200-day moving average. And instead, it's pulling back from it. And this is suggesting that we're still very much within a corrective phase overall. And until central banks relent, then we're likely to have much more volatile trading. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.